Bad calls. Hi, Frank.
Hello.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to what is absolutely the most unprofessional podcast you'll ever hear in your life. Welcome to your first weekly lesson, Lessons from the Dojang, our very first audio-only episode. I am your co-host, Master Patsy Zarella, and with me, who's going to be with me for here on in every Wednesday, my dearest friend and the only attorney that I've ever really liked, Frank Patel. How are you, Frank?
I'm well, Master Patsy. Thank you. It's so great to be here. I'm looking forward to our weekly midweek updates on this podcast. I'm so excited about this, that we're starting this up this week.
Yeah, I'm really, really, really excited about it. I'm hoping that it takes off and we can do a little bit of good. As far as I'm concerned, I say we just jump right into it.
Let's get into it.
Last week, if anybody was listening to or watching our normal show on YouTube with Master Grant and I, Frank was kind enough to join us, and we had talked about the next generation in voting was one of the segments that we had. I know our segments kind of tend to run together a little bit, but Frank was talking about his daughter and how she took a stand and was a little discouraged that she wasn't, she never did register to vote. And there were some reasons behind that, all good for whatever. But it started making me think a little bit about different ways for encouraging the next generation to vote, because I think we really see a separation between our kids or the next generation who actually really want to be involved and actually really want to vote and be in a position where they for whatever reason, and let's make a blanket statement, and it may not be a very accurate one, but I think it's something that everybody can wrap their heads around. Our next generation, our youth, our kids, Frank and I are 50, right, roughly?
Yes, sir.
And our kids, whenever they want to vote, whenever they actually want to participate in this, and I'm going to make an argument that we have a generation of kids coming up who actually truly want to be involved in this process, really want to be involved, in the shaping of our country. The mechanism in which they can be involved is not conducive to the lifestyle of their generation. It kind of lags behind. It kind of makes them feel, I don't want to say old school, but outdated. And they can't really kind of wrap their heads around why they have to do things in the way we do them whenever we vote, because it just doesn't make sense, right? It's antiquated. And so I started thinking about that a little bit, and I started coming up with some ideas. And Frank, I want to throw them at you, and I want you to think about them a little bit. I really am interested in your opinion. The first thing I thought of was, why don't we make an app for it? And I understand that there's going to be some security issues or whatever. We got smart people who can figure this stuff out. It wouldn't be very hard, but whenever we get our general election results back, normally the results that we get immediately are not the final results, they're not the official results, because there is a series of recounts that go along with that vote. Generally, the vote changes by maybe a couple of votes here and there, but not really anything that's ever affect the result that is established, even if it is an unofficial result, unless it's something that's really, really tight. But in that case, there's enough attention on it that, the system is in place to get an actual winner. And it's one of the things that, believe it or not, we actually do a very good job in determining the outcome and the winner of an election. But my idea is, especially with a phone app, the app kind of sits dormant until the actual official results are established. And then once those official results are established, you have from that date, whatever that date may be, until election day, the general election day, which is normally in November, if you have the app, you have that entire time up until midnight of election day to cast your vote. And so you don't have to wait until, you know, the second Tuesday in November or whatever it is. You have that entire time from the time that the first election, I'm sorry, I'm so bad at this. From the time those results are official until midnight of election day to cast your vote. And I always thought that was a really good idea, to be able to give somebody the ability to just get on their phone and use Touch ID or put in a code or whatever the case may be and just cast your vote right on an app. To me, that's almost a safer way or a more controlled way than what we have now, where we have voting machines where just we don't know what software is in there. We don't know if there's any safeguards in place. We don't know if there's any firewalls in place. We have no idea. Another idea I came up with was weekend voting. So you don't want to do the app. Well, let's just do it on a Saturday. You know, we have all day Saturday to do it or all day Sunday to do it. Because most people don't work the entire weekend. Even if they did, they're going to find an hour or so to be able to go vote. And my third idea was, let's just make Election Day a holiday. Let's just call it a federal holiday. And I know, like the place where I'm employed, there's very few actual federal holidays that my employer actually recognizes, but at the same time, I'm done working at 3:30, 4 o'clock, you know, unless I want to stay after, so I still have plenty of time to go vote. So I'm real curious as to your thoughts, Frank. What do you think about this idea of kind of changing the historical way or traditional way that we vote and kind of bringing it up into the 21st century? And I'm real curious to hear your thoughts about this.
You know, I'm going to start my sentences a few times with kind of preliminary statements, because I think being on this format, it may cut in and out a little bit. So I want the main points to get recorded. I will say that my initial reaction when you were talking about an app was that I was a little concerned because of the possible security breaches that could occur, just like when we have electronic voting booths. But I will tell you that as I continued to think about what you were saying, and I kept reaching back into my mind to think about what other comparable things are there out there that there are controls with electronic use, personal electronic use for recording information or for using for important security or secured type information. And I came back to my profession, and I will tell you that by using that analogy, and I'm going to get into the analogy in a second, I think it's an excellent idea, Patsy, and I think it can work very well, because you can keep a record of your own vote on your phone or whatever device you use. And that way, when there's a recount, you would always have the proof. Every individual would have the proof. And if they say, you know, the votes that came in Lawrence County were overwhelmingly, you know, in favor of candidate A, but you and your whole family and everybody else you know voted for candidate B, and that's all on your phones, you know, they'd have to show proof that, in fact, there were the votes for candidate A. So I think it's an excellent idea for that reason. But the more important analogy, I think, from my own perspective and my own history, is when the courts switched over from pure paper filing, that you'd have to walk into the courthouse and take a paper with you and have it time-stamped, to electronic filing. Now, we have sensitive information in court filings. We have important facts that we include in the court filings. And we have to know that these filings come from either an individual who's representing themselves or from the attorney who's representing the individual. So the attorney has a number, an attorney ID number. They have a registration that they filled out to file online. So why couldn't we do the same thing with individuals? You have an individual registration, a voter registration? Of course you do. A paper registration or however you register to vote. You'll have a number assigned on that. You log in with that number, and you vote under that number. So everybody would have that individual number, each person. So they would only be accounted for once, and they could only log in with their secure login, and they vote through that. And I would say there's a better control in terms of not voting in multiple jurisdictions, which is one of the fears that people talk about. There's a better control in that, you know, deceased people would no longer have nobody could vote for them. They couldn't walk into a polling station and represent that they were somebody else that they weren't. So I think for those reasons, and the fact that it's been done for very sensitive information and in a way that has protected the filings that people have made, and we have a record of those filings being done electronically, it surely could be done for voting. And I think that it's an excellent idea for those reasons. So I love that. I love that one. And then we can move into the second topic, but I wanted to get, I guess, your feedback on my feedback on this kind of comparison to electronic filing.
Yeah, you know, I always thought, because there's always safeguards in place, and anybody who is worth anything is going to have these safeguards in place, right? We know that to assign a number to a voter ID or a voter registration isn't hard to do. I'll argue that it's probably already there. Okay, it may not be public. It may not be something that's, you know, next to your name. This is voter number, whatever. But if they're going to do some sort of database, if they're going to sort of centralize the data of registered voters, I promise you there's a number assigned to it already. There has to be.
Yeah, okay. And there's a fear, of course, that, you know, somebody's going to get labeled and say, you're the one that voted for so-and-so, you voted for so-and-so.
Right, yeah, but, you know, I mean, and understand it, and that is a legitimate concern, especially with people our age and even older who truly don't get this, you know, how these things work, where it is an autonomous or not autonomous. We don't know who you vote for, but let's be honest. We kind of know who you vote for, okay? Because even with the paper ballots, that paper ballot has a number on it.
And I'll tell you, right? You know, exactly.
So we do have that already. I mean, if somebody dug deep enough, and it really isn't very hard to do, you don't have to dig very deep. There's not too many layers you have to go down to find out who Frank Mattel voted for.
It's
not hard to do. We trust the system, and I see no reason to not trust the system, because it's worked for, you know, 200 and some years, right?
Absolutely.
We already have it there. Plus, whenever we're doing this electronically now, and we have this app, we have an IP address, we have a MAC address, we have the ability to say, you used this device on this network at this time in order to cast your vote. That doesn't mean that it's going to tell you, it's going to spit out who you voted for. It's just going to tell you pretty much where you were, what day it was on, and at what time whenever you cast that vote. And to me, that's an incredibly secure system, right? Because we can't spoof that now. I mean, yeah, okay. Yeah, we could, but it would take a lot. It would take a far greater effort to hit every single person who's doing that. Plus, don't forget, we're not talking about a whole bunch of people who are doing this on one day. We were talking about a whole bunch of people who are doing this over the amount of time between, what is it, May and November. Because as soon as those primary ballots are verified, and we have an official count of who won the primary. All right, it's no longer unofficial; it's now official. So we've gone through the cycle, and that doesn't change. We now have from that moment, not even that day, that actual moment, that those results become official until midnight of November, that day in November. We have that entire time for somebody to cast their vote. They don't have to do it on one day. That makes it incredibly difficult to be able to spoof somebody's vote tally to fake somebody's voter registration or voter's ID or whatever vote they did. It makes it incredibly difficult, because we're talking months.
Exactly. And if somebody's going to try to do that in a farm, you know, in one of these electronic farms in Russia or, you know, whatever country that they're generating the fraudulent votes out of, if they try to do it, they're going to do it in batches. And there's going to be a lot of there'll be a lot of signals that people would see. Hey, there's a bunch of votes coming in from this IP address. Even if it's a masked IP address, there'd be a lot of votes coming in at one time under that masked IP address. So it would really be difficult, as you're saying.
And you make the app something where you cannot access the app if you're behind a VPN or something like that, right? Because, right. I mean, I'll be honest. I use VPNs all the time. And I do it intentionally because I really don't want my ISP, who in this case is Comcast, to know what websites I'm going to, what movies I'm watching. And it's not because I have anything to hide. I just don't think it's any of their damn business.
You don't want them advertising to you, trying to call data about what, you know, to send you.
Right. It's what I'm doing in my living room. And, Comcast doesn't need to know what I'm doing in my living room.
That's
or in
right.
my bedroom or in my bathroom or wherever the hell my phone is at the time whenever I decide I'm going to do this.
Right.
As much as they want to and as much as money they're going to make off of it. And, you know, God bless them. If I was in their position, I would probably be doing the same thing because I'm looking to get every dime I can get. But I'm behind a VPN and my VPN is telling whatever my ISP is that I'm in Belgium or someplace. Well, guess what? I can't access the app.
That's right.
Now I got to do the traditional, you know, mail-in ballot or the absentee ballot or whatever it is, right? So you still have the opportunity to cast your vote. No one's taking that away from you. You just got to do it in a more traditional sense than you can on the app because you're choosing to be behind a VPN or you're not in the country at the time or whatever the case may be. So to me, an app makes all the sense in the world. It's secure. It's if it's done correctly, and I am making the assumption that the people who are creating this app and the folks that who are responsible for the security are actually doing what they're supposed to do. And I have no reason to believe that they wouldn't, right? I mean, let's face it, your company, your livelihood depends upon the security of this. You're not going to be an asshole and just have holes all over the place. It's not like a Dunkin' Donuts app, right? This is your vote.
Master Passage, let me jump in.
A hell of a lot more secure. And even if it is a little bit of a pain in the ass whenever I'm logging into it, so what? Let it be a little bit more of a pain in the ass. It's going to be worth it because we know whenever Frank Mattel votes and he votes on that app, what that app reflects is exactly what he wanted. I don't see any problem with that.
I think that's a good thing, and I think that could be a solution, definitely a solution. And I like your other two ideas. You know, I think weekend voting, we talked about that we alluded to it in a way on the weekend when we were talking on the video podcast that we did on Sunday. You know, that extended voting hours, extended voting days, early voting, those kind of things, and a voting holiday. You know, the actual election day being a holiday is a fantastic idea. I know that some other politicians have floated that idea. I think it would be wonderful if we did that. It's an important day. So I think that all those ideas are things that need to be explored. And I would just say, you know, Patsy, before we sum up this particular segment, I would like you to give, if folks who are listening don't know your Twitter handle, if they don't know how to respond or subscribe to you on YouTube, give them that information, because I'd like to have some of our viewers and listeners offer their feedback on this subject and any subject we talk about. I'd really love to have them comment on this, whether they agree or don't agree. You know, I think there's IT folks that probably listen to your show that watch the show, and I'd love to have them, you know, give their pros and cons about what we're talking about, because that kind of feedback and dialogue is really, you know, that's really important to what we're doing as we move forward.
Well, my, you know, if you just look up, you know, lessons from the Dojang lessons on Twitter. I mean, if you just type in lessons from Dojang, you're going to find it there.
Dojang.
Dojang, because it's the Korean version, right? Most everybody else looks at it as a dojo, but you know, we're the Korean guys because we practice Aikido, so it's Dojang. If you want to contact me directly, just look for Pizzarilla on YouTube, Pzarilla. We'll get you in touch with me on Twitter. And honestly, you know what? I'm going to give it back to you, Frank. You know, always look for Butchered Sports Talk, right? We might as well be reciprocal. Frank does a fantastic job, folks. He does a fantastic job on Twitter. He does a fantastic job on YouTube. And, you know, we kind of have this little bit of a cross-pollinization a little bit to kind of help each other out. But at the end of the day, you know, look for it. Subscribe to it. Watch his videos. See what Frank's doing on YouTube, because it's fabulous stuff. Especially if you're a sports fan, you're just gonna love what Frank's up to. So here we go with that. So hopefully people kind of grab on. Unfortunately, I don't have a really cool segue. You know, Master Grant's great at the segues. I don't have a good one, which is unfortunate. But our next subject is, guess what? Bernie Sanders is running again. In case you couldn't tell by my tone, I'm not exactly excited about it, but I'm not exactly excited about it for two reasons. And Frank, I want you to comment on what I'm saying. Here's my two reasons. Number one, been there, done that. Okay. There's a law. It's not even a theory. It is a law of diminishing returns, right? Bernie ran the first time. Bernie ran 2 years ago, roughly. And Hillary spanked him. He stayed in way too long, and I will make the argument, of course, it's a personal opinion. I have no way of proving it. It's a personal opinion that he kind of hurt the Democratic Party because he stayed in way too long. Even whenever it was very apparent that he wasn't going to get the nomination, and the fact that he's an independent and running as a Democrat really pissed me off to no end, because I am an independent, and I don't want to see somebody who is a fellow independent run in a primary or run on a ticket that is a Democratic Party ticket. If I wanted to be a Democrat, if I wanted to support a Democrat, I would register as a Democrat. I'm intentionally registered as a Republican. Yeah, that'll be the day. You'll see God first. I intentionally have my registration as an independent. I do that intentionally. It's not because I don't want to be bothered in the primaries. It's because I like being an independent. I do not like being tied to a party, even though I am probably one of the more liberal people you'll ever find. I like being an independent. And the fact that Bernie insists on running as a Democrat kind of bothers me a little bit. I'm not a big fan. But my question to you is, do you think, especially with this wave that we had and the people who are now in Congress, especially in the House, and the demographics that you have there, the diverse demographics, do you think that Bernie is as important as he was 4 years ago whenever he was running against Hillary?
Wow, it's a big question. And, you know, I personally think that the point that you made at the outset is the biggest point, which is the law of diminishing returns. I think that, you know, Bernie has been around for a long time. Bernie's liberalism or progressivism or whatever you would want to label it, you know, progressive is forward thinking. Progressive is change for the sake of betterment, you know, not change for just the sake of change. And when Bernie's ideas are not progressive anymore. You know, I mean, Bernie's ideas are basically 30, 40 years old. So for that reason, I think he's not as important as a candidate, given what you're talking about with kind of the wave that came in to, you know, in this last midterm election. Do I think he still has his fervent supporters and he would have some kind of an impact? Yes, I do think that he would have an impact, but is it going to be as big an impact as he had the last time? No. And I think that there's a little bit of, you know, discouragement amongst the folks who supported him, because they don't feel that he has continued to, and this is a, you know, really my own personal take, but just from reading people's comments, listening to what's out there, they don't feel that he's continued to support the progressive agenda as honestly as maybe he did the first time around. So I think that's what would hurt him ultimately. Last thought on that from my perspective is that I think that you know, I did witness firsthand. I was driving back into Baltimore when Bernie had one of his last rallies, and it was after Super Tuesday. It was after he was beaten. He was already beaten. Hillary had him beat. So what interested me about that was I was driving into town, and I had to wait to drive through, you know, Pratt Street. If you've ever been in Baltimore, Pratt Street, Lombard Street are two of the streets that go east-west, very big streets, lots of traffic. Traffic was stopped, Patsy, because there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people walking in the street with Bernie signs.
Wow.
Yes. And what – yeah, it was very interesting to me because he was already beat. And people came out, and it wasn't a nice day. It was the springtime. Baltimore springs are usually nice, but this was a rainy day, overcast, and it didn't stop them. The fact that he was already beaten didn't stop them, and the fact that it was rainy out didn't stop them. So, you know, there is something to be said for him and his appeal. I would hope that what he does is finds a way to turn his – and this is what I think your criticism of him was very legitimate. Could he turn his popularity into a support for a younger candidate? And it doesn't just have to be a younger candidate, but a more progressive candidate, somebody who's going to bring the ideals and electability to the table. Could he do that? And that would be hopeful. You know, I'm very hopeful for that. But – given his history and when he stayed in so long the last time. But could that staying in so long be a testament to those people who walked out in the rain and stood out there for him, right? You know, they were there for him. So I don't know. It's a tough call, but I think ultimately I'm falling down on the side of saying he's not quite as relevant in 2020.
Yeah. I would agree. I think that once you begin your second run at a primary, right? Because don't forget, it's not like he lost in the general. This is the primary. When you begin your second run at the – so he's not Nixon, right?
Yeah.
He lost in the general and then came back and then, you know, ultimately won. But let's face it, he was going against somebody that just wasn't going to lose. Whenever you fail in the primary and now you're coming back again in the primary and you have such a diverse field. And, you know, let me be the disclaimer. Let me show you straight out. I'm all in with in Kamala Harris. I'm all in with her. I think she is phenomenal. I think she is the person we need because, well, there's a variety of reasons, but I'm a big supporter of Kamala Harris, and I'm going to be until she decides she's no longer running. Whenever you're looking at such a field where you have minorities, you know, like you have Kamala Harris, you have Cory Booker, you have females who are looking at this wave and saying, you know what, I can do this now. The shackles are off. I can be a part of this whole thing. I'm not real sure where Bernie Sanders fits into this whole thing. And I understand as soon as he announced his that he's running, Kamala Harris was the front runner as far as donations in the first 24 hours until Bernie announced it, then he kind of blew her numbers away. I'm wondering if that's not a flash in the pan, that as this thing continues on and we're seeing, and again, I'm going to be honest, I really think, and maybe I'm wrong, I hope I'm not, but maybe I am, that the election that we just had back in November was not a flash in the pan. That is a reflection of where our country is headed. And these are the young people, these are the minorities, these are the women, these are whatever, who decided that, you know what, it's time to get this. This is our time. And we're not backing down. And I bought into this hook, line, and sinker. I really did. Maybe it's a naive action on my part. Well, you know, time will tell. But I don't see how what this guy's bringing to the table really has any relevance anymore, because you have so many people who are saying the same thing and are have the ability to attract at least as many people as he does, that it's actually going to change it. I really don't think that you know, he I really have the opinion that he's going to become an also-ran. I'm not saying who I think is going to end up being the Democratic nominee, because I'm not going to have much say in it because I don't get to vote in the primaries. But I truly wonder if you know, he had his time and Hillary beat him. As much as I hate to say that, I don't hate to say it, but as hard as that is for a lot of Bernie supporters to admit or to hear, he had his shot and he was beat. And I now that you have a progressive field of people, where it's not one person now, it's a whole bunch of people. I really don't know if his message and what he's trying to push and what his platform is any more relevant than Kamala Harris's or anybody else's, even Cory Booker's or anybody in the Democratic field now who threw their hat in the ring and has a legitimate shot. I don't see where he's much of a standout anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue. That there's progressive ideas out there that he's not differing much from any other progressive ideas that are out there. And it comes down to this for me, Patsy. When I look at Master Patsy, when I look at, you know, who am I going to support ultimately? And I haven't decided yet. I do like Kamala Harris, but I haven't decided where I'm going to throw my full weight behind, because I want to see somebody that's electable. And I think that at the end of the day, Bernie Sanders has an appeal to a large sector of the democratically registered voters, the people who are registered to vote Democrat. There's a large sector of those folks who he appealed to in that last election, who could also be swayed by somebody else, you know, and I think those folks could be excited by, you know, a different candidate. And who's also electable, though, across the board to independents and to moderate Republicans and people in the South and people in the Midwest and people in the Southwest. And I don't see Bernie having the appeal to a lot of people in Mississippi, to a lot of people in Georgia, to a lot of people in, you know, Alabama, to a lot of people in Texas. Unfortunately, he is who he is, and he's not going to have the appeal to those folks. And I'm not saying that Kamala Harris is going to have a large appeal to a lot of folks in those states, but she may have more of an appeal to some folks in those states. There may be somebody by the name of Beto O'Rourke who has a lot of appeal to people in the Southwest and in Texas and all the way through the Midwest, up through the Midwest.
Yep. Absolutely.
And he may catch fire in the East. You know, there could be people one of my concerns, I don't have a lot of concerns with Kamala Harris, because I think she's such a smart person, and she just has a way of handling any situation she's in. She's got that it factor, you know. But, you know, there's going to be the tendency to on the other side, to label her as a, you know, a left coast, left wing California person.
Right.
You know what? If she, you know, you can embrace that and run with it. She can do that. But, you know, the problem from the perspective of the general electorate is, can that hurt people? Sometimes it can in a general election. Whereas if you get somebody like, you know, from Minnesota, somebody from Texas, somebody from Ohio, somebody from Illinois, you know, they can't label them that way. It's hard to put a label on somebody, you know, that comes from a Midwestern or a Southwestern state that just sticks because of the place they're from. So that's a disadvantage, because, you know, California has its idiosyncrasies when you come from the left. If you come from there and you're a Nixon or you're a Reagan, it doesn't hurt. But if you come from there and you're a liberal, then calling you a lefty liberal from California hurts in the general election.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And my point is, you know, we lean whichever way we lean, right? And even as liberals, we still have you know, you kind of lean one way and I kind of lean the other. But eventually someone's going to have to prove themselves, right? Eventually,
yep.
Someone's going to have to step up to the plate and hit that game-winning single or hit that home run or whatever the case may be. Eventually, someone's going to have to do it. I just don't think that Bernie is, and this might be oversimplifying things a little bit, I don't think he's as special this time around as he was 4 years ago.
That shine's worn off. Yep.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening. And I think he's going to become less relevant far earlier this time around than he was last time around. Because,
and I just hope that it sorts itself out for the good of everybody at some point.
Yeah, early. I agree. I completely agree.
Speaking of sorting things out, I've been trying to sort out this whole interview that took place this past Sunday with McCabe. Did you get a chance to see that or any portions of the McCabe interview on CBS?
The one that was on 60 Minutes?
Yeah, was that a bombshell or what?
Holy shit. Yeah, I watched it, like, and I felt like a kid at Christmas, right? Not because I was getting something, but just that wide-eyed wonder.
Yeah.
What was going on. Yeah, absolutely.
Great description. I mean, some of my big takeaways, and I know we're going to probably try to hit these highlights quickly as we're time constrained, but some of my highlights from that were that he talked about, the wearing of the wire, Rosenstein wearing of the wire. You know, Rod Rosenstein poo-pooed that before because he needed to kind of calm down Trump a little bit and try to keep everybody moving forward on whatever machinations they had to try to keep a lid on things, so to speak. He poo-pooed the idea of him wearing a wire was ever spoken of, but now we have some confirmation that it was suggested twice by Rod Rosenstein from McCabe, who he himself said, I suggested we don't do that. This is McCabe saying, I don't think we should do that at this time. So that's one of the big takeaways, and there's a sub-takeaway from that. But just quickly, what do you think of the fact that, I mean, we all probably believed that Rosenstein wanted to wear a wire, but then he denied it. So now we have verification. What do you think of that? I mean, these are really surreal times that the acting attorney general, second in command, and then the acting attorney general was saying, I better go wear a wire and when I go talk to the president. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it makes me wonder. And honestly, I'll be honest, I'm not a big McCabe fan, and I don't know how much he's hyping things in order to sell his book. But that being said, I don't discount what his recollection of what happened. I'm not saying he's lying by any means. These guys don't lie. Okay.
Right.
I know it's hard to believe for, especially to folks, and we both know them, Frank, who are just so right wing and so right leaning. They distrust everything that anybody who is employed by our government says. But I honestly believe that these guys don't lie at all. Okay. I was never a big McCabe fan, but whenever he says this happened, I tend to believe it. Okay. Yeah. And maybe it's naive on my part, but I look at somebody in his position who really has a whole lot to lose. And I think that's incredibly important, that we're talking about somebody who has a lot of potential money to make because of his book, a whole lot of potential money to make, a whole lot of potential credibility to hold on to. I find it hard to believe that somebody in that position is willing to just come up with this incredibly blatant lie about things. Right? Do I think he's spinning things a little bit in order to sell books? Yeah, of course I do. But, this is politics. Everybody spins everything. Right? The fact that Rosenstein decided to wear a wire doesn't surprise me. To be honest, it doesn't surprise me that he said he would be willing to do so. I do question, was this something he said in passing? Is this something he said in order to push an agenda that, he's saying that he's so into this. He believes in this so much that he's willing to go to this extreme. Yeah, I believe that. And he's never really, really denied it, right? He's never really said, no, I never said that.
Right.
He kind of pushed back a little bit on the context or the spin that a lot of players were trying to put on it, but he never said he didn't do it.
Right.
And the more I watch McCabe and And I'll be honest, you know, I'm looking at him like whenever he's on Colbert's show. He was just on MSNBC today before we started on Nicole Wallace, who, by the way, is the second most brilliant person on MSNBC. Only Rachel Maddow's, well, I think Rachel Maddow's absolutely brilliant. But whenever you're listening to these guys and you're listening to them talk and you're listening to how they're answering, it's not really what they're saying, but it's how they're saying it. It's their body language. It's how they're presenting the facts as they see it. Wow. It's absolutely unbelievable to sit there and say, look, this guy knows a whole lot that he didn't put in the book. And yeah, he's kind of playing that up a little bit because he wants you to buy the book and he wants you to do this. If there's like that mystery thing, but this guy knows a lot more than he's saying. And if you follow it through and you sit there and you kind of read between the lines, there's something there. I mean, I'm sorry, there is. This isn't bullshit. This is somebody who's telling you flat out, hey, look, there's a problem here.
Yeah. And then the subset of what we just talked about is, you know, in terms of why did Rod Rosenstein want to wear a wire into the Oval Office to talk to Trump, and why did McCabe say that it's not necessary yet to do that? And it is because he was talking about, well, are we going to catch him saying something about why he fired Comey? Why did he fire Comey? I want to have him explain that to me, and I want him to say it, and we can record him saying that. And then what's interesting about that is, but he did it later on live TV on NBC. Trump went ahead and admitted on live TV why he fired Comey for the Russia thing. And,
yeah,
you know, the interesting thing about that is, I mean, goodness gracious, it blows your socks off, just in a sense of having a sitting president admit to that. Secondly, if this is the weird dynamic about that. If he had not said that on live TV, but he had said it in the Oval Office in private and been recorded saying it in secret, so to speak, in confidence with one of his DOJ top brass people, meaning Rod Rosenstein.
Uh-huh.
And if it had been released to the public in that fashion, it would have been more of a bombshell in a weird way, because it would have been like he didn't know he was going to say it out loud to everybody for public consumption. Now people almost like – the people that are Trump apologists – for some reason believe that because he said it on TV that there must be nothing wrong with it.
Right.
So right. That's the weird thing.
Yeah, but, and you know what? That opens up a whole lot more, and it's something I really don't – it's a rabbit hole I don't want to go down through, because holy shit, that gets crazy after that. But,
yeah.
You know, here's the thing that surprises the hell out of me is, you know, whenever we go back – whenever we were kids and the Watergate thing goes, right? And we were how old were we then, right? We were kids.
We were really young. We're talking probably single digits, like, you know, seven, eight years old. I mean, that was 19, what, 74, 75?
74, right? I was seven, I think, right?
Right? Yep.
You're looking at this thing and you're looking at the tapes that basically did Nixon in. Was the tapes, right? I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a lot to it, but let's be as generic as possible. It was the tapes that did him in,
right?
What Nixon said and did, and the gist and the energy that was on those tapes, this guy's doing in real time with Lester Holt on national television.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
If it took down a president then, why the hell would you think that it's not going to take down a president now? Only the method of communication has changed.
That's it.
Right.
That's it.
Everything else, the structure, the way we do things, that's all stayed the same. That hasn't changed. What makes you think that? And obviously, I don't mean you, but what makes somebody think that because he said this to Lester Holt on NBC is any less credible or means any less than somebody who listened to the tapes that Nixon himself was doing in the Oval Office? What difference does it make? It's still the words of the president. That's still the words of the person who pulled the trigger on this.
What
difference does it make what format it is, or in what environment it's in? The context is the same.
It's an admission to taking an action as a president to remove somebody from a position because of his concern over what they would find or what they would do on an investigation about him.
Right.
That's
right. It's only the window dressing that changes, right?
Yeah. So, you know, and talking about people who are in charge of, you know, doing investigations and how that involves and how Trump has always been involved in those kind of things, I find it interesting that, you know, going back and piecing together the whole idea of when Comey, when FBI agent Director Comey, then director, reopened the Hillary email investigation just before the election, if you remember that, which I think, you know, it's undeniable that swung a large amount of votes that may have been going towards Hillary.
I completely agree.
Trump,
yes.
Or people that just went ahead and just didn't vote for her and voted for a third party candidate because they couldn't, you know, stomach it at that point. So, you know, interestingly, go back and look at this. Go back and look at – read some of the stuff around it. Rudy, look at the YouTube around Rudy at the time. And Rudy Giuliani was talking about he knows something's going to come out. Okay, now think about it. Rudy Giuliani was the mayor of New York. He was also a prosecutor at one time, had many contacts within the FBI in the New York field office. Those folks have been recently outed as folks who were loyal to Trump during the election run-up. They forced Comey to reopen the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what tipped the election. And the thing is, what's ironic or not ironic, what's going to be interesting about this is, again, is this another piece that can be tied to, did Trump know or have any influence over that going on? Or was this a rogue, you know, FBI and a rogue agent and a rogue Rudy just pulling the strings behind the scene without Trump knowing anything about it? Now, I don't believe at all that Trump didn't know anything about it. The proof, the question is, can you prove that Trump knew anything about it? And there's probably some information floating out there. There's some facts floating out there, whether they're email messages, whether there's some kind of written message, recorded message, anything at all that's going to show that he had correspondence with Rudy over getting these guys in the field office in the FBI in New York to force the issue.
Right. So, and that's the big question, isn't it?
Yep. But even if we don't get that, we have this New York Times piece on Trump recently that and I love the videos surrounding this, where Trump was asked, did you ask your acting attorney general Whitaker, the most recent acting attorney general Whitaker, to intervene in the Southern District of New York investigation into Cohen, into remember his attorney Cohen? And Trump pauses for more than a beat.
Yep.
He pauses. And then he says no, and he says something about it being fake news. But it's almost like for a moment he thinks, should I answer this question? And then he goes forward with his natural slimy instinct to just deny it and say no. But, you know, there's evidence, again, that he in fact did ask Whitaker to intervene. And this to me, you asked me on Sunday a very critical question in response to some things we were talking about. And I said, I think my tipping point at that point on Sunday was if Trump fires Barr, the now confirmed attorney general, if he fires Barr over something, then the Republican Congress will turn against Trump. Well, I'm wondering now if this might be the tipping point. An earlier tipping point could occur if the Republican Congress gets proof, or Republican senators and Congress get proof that Trump asked Whitaker to intervene in that. It may be enough. It may be enough to turn enough people against him in the Senate. What do you think?
Well, you know what? I honestly believe, and again, maybe it's you know, me being a little bit naive, and I have been known to do that from time to time. You know, Master Grant will be more than willing to point that out to you. In fact, he would probably relish in it. there are times where I'm very naive. About silly little things that in hindsight end up being very important things, but you don't know that at the beginning. And believe me, if Master Grant's not willing to tell you this, my wife is more than willing to tell you.
I'm going to ask her this time we're at lunch.
I honestly believe that this person that we have who is going to be the director now, who is taking Whitaker's place, he can say what he wants on Fox, and he can say these things here and there. I firmly believe this is a guy who takes his position very seriously. And I really believe that he is not a person who is the next Whitaker, right? Who is doing this because at the end of the day, he wants a position on Fox News. I don't care if you're the most conservative person in the world. I don't care if you're the most Republican, the most conservative in the world. I truly don't. If you're taking your position seriously and you are in a position that he's going to be in, you can be as conservative as you want. And part of me takes a lot of comfort knowing that you are conservative, as weird as that may sound, because you're going to do things, whenever you do take action, it's going to be on a solid foundation, okay? It may take a little longer than I'd like. And it may take a lot of convincing to get you to that point, far more than maybe it should. But eventually you're going to end up doing the right thing. So the idea that we have somebody who is in place. Now, that being said, some of the comments he made do kind of disturb me a little bit. But I think, you know, Bush never had a problem with this guy.
Right, and
whenever you look at Bush's record, whenever you look at his record as far as the things that are pertaining to where the spotlight is going to be, I have a hard time disputing it. I really do. It may take a while to get there, but I think that we could find a whole lot of people who are worst choice, right? And I think at the end of the day, he's going to end up doing the right thing because both Bushes always, at the end of the day, ended up doing the right thing. It may have taken them a long time to get there. They may have taken the scenic route to get from point A to point B. But they always end up, at the end of the day, at least trying to do the right thing. So I'm willing to give this guy a lot of leeway, and I'm not really concerned. I would be much more concerned if Whitaker was still in charge because I have no doubt that he is positioning himself to be a pundit someplace as opposed to actually being the AG. I really think he can't handle that responsibility, and it's far easier for him to point fingers than it is to actually shoulder responsibility. But I think that what we have here, we could do a lot worse. It's not my ideal choice, but I think at the end of the day, it's just going to take longer to get to the same conclusion. Maybe like I said, maybe I'm naive about this, and I apologize if I am. But I'm not very concerned with our new Attorney General. I do not like the fact that Rosenstein is eventually going to step down, and he's going to be replaced by this jackass who. What was he, the secretary in charge of finance or whatever the fuck it is? This guy has no clue what it means to be in the position he's about to be in. That bothers me a little bit because I think he's going to be easily influenced. I don't think he has an agenda as much as I think he's going to be a very easy influence. But I'm not very concerned about Whitaker's replacement. How's that sound?
I agree. I think that, you know, you're spot on with your analysis about Barr. Barr has been around a long time. He's been in and out of politics and been a political appointee through a few different cycles. And for those reasons, and for the reasons that you specifically said about his the fact that he was vetted through Bush before. Now, the disturbing things about this, the current investigation, I wonder a little bit about that. But I do think that he is respects Bob Mueller enough through enough of what I've read about him and seen about their interactions that I think that his respect will allow Bob Mueller to finish his report. And I think that, you know, it's a chess game. You know, when you look at what Barr wants to do in his lifetime is to do good and to do the right thing. And ultimately, you know, if he feels like I can get in this position, you know, get the confidence of Trump, because Trump's going to appoint somebody, like you said, it could be a far worse appointee. He's going to appoint somebody. So if I can get in this position, gain the confidence of Trump, and then ultimately get the chance to do the right thing by the American people, that's hopeful. And you should hold out that hope, and I hold out that hope as well. So, you know, that's really my thought on that, and I'm glad we got a chance to fully kind of, at least for the time frame that we had, you know, get to that. I am hopeful that that will be the tipping point and that we get a chance to see that play out.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's incredibly conservative, and I do think that is, if you were an idealistic liberal, that this guy is going to really be a pain in your ass. You know, you're going to really have a hard time with him. But I think whenever it's all said and done, I think whenever, you know, it becomes to the point where this guy's got to make a decision, I really think that he has the best interests at heart. I really do, because if I didn't, I had a lot of faith in the first Bush. I had a lot of faith in W, even though I didn't agree with almost everything he did. I really think that at the end of the day, he was a good guy who was trying to do the right thing. We just disagreed on how we were going to score the touchdown. It wasn't a matter of if we were going to score it, it was a matter of how we were going to do it. And I kind of have a little bit of faith in this guy of doing the right thing. And again, maybe I'm just being incredibly naive. Maybe I am. And if so, I apologize ahead of time. But I really think that at the end of the day, this guy wants the truth. And wherever it leads, it leads. And he you know, he may be very reluctant to go down the path where we're more than willing to go, where we want to run to. But I think at the end of the day, he's going to end up making the right call and doing the right thing. At least, you know, I have a little bit of faith in him, which is really weird for me, who, like I said, you know, I'm as liberal can be. But I think he's going to take a little bit more convincing than somebody on our side would take. But I think at the end of the day, he's going to do the right thing. And to be honest, that's probably the best approach.
I agree. Because ultimately, if there's going to be a tipping point in the American public, it has to come from somebody who's reasoned, who's going to take their time getting to that point. And if it's somebody who's been appointed by Trump that comes to that conclusion, boy, oh boy, where do the Trump apologists go from there? And I know they'll try their best, but it won't win over the middle crowd that we talked about on Sunday. The middle crowd will say to all the folks, look, we've had enough. His own appointee said this. It's time.
Yeah. 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 I completely agree with that. I completely agree with you. He's very light, right leaning, and he may be as right as right can be. But at the end of the day, integrity is far more important to him than anything else. And if that means that I have to give up my right leaning views and opinions in order for the integrity to be preserved, I really think he's going to do it. At least I hope so.
Well, let's hope that prevails. And I think you're right, Patsy. This has been a wonderful, wonderful time on our first audio podcast. Let's do it again next Wednesday.
Absolutely. Yeah, Frank, this has been fabulous. And I hope everybody listening, you know, understands where Frank and I are coming from. And I realize we're very raw, but this is going to be polished. But I hope you take the subject and what we're doing to heart, because this is coming from our hearts.
Absolutely.
It absolutely is. So, yeah, Frank, I cannot tell you how excited I am after spending this time with you. And we're looking at almost an hour, right? It's going to be an hour by the time we kill this. How just honest and raw and true this is. And I want this to continue. And I cannot wait. I honestly, God, I cannot wait for next Wednesday in order for us to do this again. This is absolutely fabulous.
Me too. And thank you for all your work putting this together. Thank you for getting this off the ground. You're the man.
And we're gonna this is gonna be fabulous. For everybody who's listening, as I say on our video on our channel on YouTube, I want to say it again on our audio channel. Your time is very valuable. It's very important, and the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. It truly does. You don't know us. We're not related. You don't live in the same community. Well, maybe you do, but chances are you don't. And you're still willing to spend that time with us means a great deal to us. And we cannot express our gratitude and our thanks enough to you. That being said, I want to finish this part on a very positive note, because honest to God, Frank, this has been better than I could possibly imagine. We will do this again next Wednesday. Absolutely. This has been absolutely fabulous. And again, thank you to everybody who's been listening to us. So before I kill this and before I say goodbye, I want to take a second to thank you for your time, Frank, because again, even though our listeners' time is very valuable, your time is also very valuable. And thank you so much for doing this with me. We're going to continue to explore. We're going to continue to improve. And eventually, this is going to actually sound like a professional podcast. At least I sincerely hope so. We're going to do our best.
I have no doubt about that. With you at the helm, I have no doubt we're going to get there. And I tell you, thank you so much again for putting this together. And it's my pleasure to be with you on this. And I'm sure we'll have nothing but great content to put together, because there's always such great material to talk about every week, right?
Yeah, the other side truly makes it easy for us to talk about things.
Yeah.
Thank you, Frank, and I look forward to the next time we get together and talk. And to everybody listening, again, thank you for your time. As I like to say, goodbye, and God bless. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, everybody. Take care.